Michigan HockeyCast 6.18, where we're back on the roller coaster. I did last week. Alex, you mentioned that you also went to LCA this week for a hockey game.
It was the Thursday night game.
So also on the same day, just 1 week later.
Yeah, against New York Islanders.
Which was, I think we should have switched games. Like we both might have enjoyed the game that the other one went to a little bit more.
I still got enjoyment because I did not watch Michigan Rutgers basketball.
I was forced to watch that because Craig could not watch it, and so it was on, but I made him mute it, and I watched the NHL games instead, because I was not going to watch us lose by 40 to Rutgers again.
I got a text from Will Combs after the game that just said, what a brutal game.
Yeah. He texted me, too, and I was like, and he goes, this was the worst game I've seen or watched this year or whatever. And I was like, oh, man, I wish that you hadn't gone to this game. I was hoping you had skipped it, but alas. So, poor guy. Hope he didn't bring all his kids to that. Just bad times all the way around. But anyway, so you went to LCA. Did you park at MGM?
No.
What? That was the one thing you had to do.
Yeah.
Where did you park?
A little closer to the stadium.
Okay. Did you have to pay for parking?
Yeah.
All right. All right, then where did you sit?
In the upper level.
So
I was with two other people, and that's what made sense financially
for three tickets.
Of the guests involved.
Sure.
We decided that was what we were wanting to spend.
Was it below the gondola?
Yeah.
And do you like those seats?
Like, you could see the back side of the gondola, right? But
Could you see was it the press box side or was it the other side?
It was the seating gondola side.
Oh, okay.
So
I think they should rotate, just go around like an actual gondola. So you just end up on different sides, like those restaurants that rotate on the top. Detroit has one of those, don't they?
They used to.
The Renaissance, was that?
The Renaissance, yes. Yeah. I went to that restaurant a couple years ago and it doesn't rotate anymore.
Oh.
They stopped doing it for a long time. Because the previous restaurant went under, and then when this restaurant opened, they looked into starting to rotate again. But the engineers came, and they said it had been so long since it's been rotating, they were going to have to do upgrades to get it to go again. And the upgrades were, outrageous for a startup restaurant to be affording. So
the gears were literally grinding.
Yeah. So, but overall, it was a lively crowd. Fans were really into it, which is nice to see, because last few times I'd been, which obviously was when the Red Wings were much worse and not in the playoff hunt, it was somewhat comatose, whereas this time the fans were really into it. There were a lot of children around where we were seated, like the row in front of us and the row behind us. There were 3 to 4 kids, right there.
Were they obnoxious?
They were just screaming the whole game.
Yeah.
So
were they running around?
Well, you couldn't really. It was packed.
Okay.
And our whole row, each row was chock full of people, so they had to sit there. But I got some gelato just outside.
Gelato? Outside of the stadium?
No, outside our section.
Oh,
it
wow.
It was right there.
Gelato.
So I was like, oh, I'll have this.
Did you also have sushi?
It's just astonishing. Every time I go to LCA, how much better it is than the Joe. The Joe had memories, blah, blah, blah.
Well, a character.
Right. It had a great name, had a great location.
Yeah.
Not going to say that stuff. I mean, it definitely outflanks Little Caesars on the name component, but unfortunately, if the Red Wings were not very, very good for a very long time while they played in that arena, it would not be remembered fondly. It was a very bad arena in every sense of the word, outside of the memories, the history, and it had good sight line stuff like that. The problem was the bathrooms, the concourse size, the lack of food options, the lack of a team shop,
all of the things
the
at the game.
The steep steps that will kill your grandmother in the winter.
Did you ever go to Yost before they renovated?
I don't think so. When did they renovate?
It was 2011, 10.
I think
11,
I 12. Did, but I went in the club section in maybe 2007, but I don't remember it really.
I mean, it was the same thing. Like the bleachers were wooden and rickety, and it was like it had character, and Michigan had won a lot of big games there, and like loved it. But at the same time, you're like, well, we might fall through at any particular time. I mean, you could drop things and they would like slide down to the bottom and end up like somewhere near the floor at the front of all of the stairs. And I mean, you know, you just can't have that kind of stuff going on anymore. So yeah, I get what you're saying, but. So overall, a good experience and a
And I mean, we got to see an octopus on the ice.
Yeah, someone threw one too. When I went,
it was a competitive game. It was disappointing that they lost at the end, but they battled back in that third period, and it was feisty game back and forth, and it was exciting. So I don't have any real.
Would you try to sit someplace else next time, or were you mostly fine with those seats?
I like to sit up high for hockey, just generally.
Yes.
To see the game.
Absolutely.
But if I go with my parents, we'll probably sit lower. They don't like sitting up.
I mean,
high,
I said this last week, but the mezzanine is awesome because you're still up, but you're close enough to the rink. I would try probably the upper part of the lower bowl. It's easier to sit down lower for basketball, I think. I think
basketball is the best.
Because you have to get the board viewing right. Like you can't sit too low where you're looking through the boards.
I think football and hockey are best up high.
Yeah.
Basketball I think can be best down low, and baseball can kind of depend.
Yeah.
I don't mind watching it up high. You just can't tell anything with balls and strikes, but you can get a much better sense of the field.
Yes.
Whereas
exactly.
If you're low, you have sometimes a better sense of
balls
and strikes.
If you're on the side, you can't check. It's hard to see balls and strikes too because
it's difficult, yeah.
Because you can't tell which side of the plate the pitch is on and that kind of thing. But it's fun to be up close in a baseball game. Like there's some liveliness to it too. But all right, So we talked about our comparative experiences at LCA. You had something else you wanted to discuss a little more hockey related before we get into. Unfortunately, game one.
There was some news in the PWHL last week about some rules they were rolling out, and they also had some other rules that I thought would be interesting to quickly discuss. But
okay.
The in-game rules, I think, that are interesting to discuss, they have been operating with the five-person shootout this season.
As opposed to three?
Three-person. Do we have any takes on that?
I don't know. I mean, are the rules the same in terms of, like, you each get a point and then the winner gets two?
Yeah.
So would it be better for five than three?
Than three.
I don't know. It probably depends on your skill level that you have. Like, if you have a bunch of skilled guys, sure.
I don't like shootouts that much, but I almost feel like five adds a little to the drama a little bit.
Just yeah, because otherwise, within two, it could be over.
Yeah.
I would be. I mean, if they went to five, I wouldn't complain.
No, I don't think it's. The other one they are using that I think is of interest is they use the jailbreak rule on penalty kills. So if you score shorthanded, then your player gets let out of the box early.
Mm, okay. So incentivizing maybe some more aggressive PKs.
Yep.
I think that if you did that, could you also pair it with if you score a power play goal, like the guy doesn't come out? Like it's a 2-minute penalty?
Say that again?
So like it's a 2-minute penalty.
Right.
So you have to spend 2 minutes in the box, not until a goal is scored. So if you score a goal, you still get your power play, like all you can eat.
Oh,
like if I feel like you'd have to almost pair those together.
I think you could make that argument. They used to do that.
Yeah.
In the NHL till the late 50s, and then power plays got too good and people complained.
Mm.
So, but yeah, I could see that argument if you were going to do jailbreak and pair.
Do you like
that.
The jailbreak?
It's a fun idea.
I don't know that
it.
I would want it in the NHL.
I don't. I want to see it more with the PWHL
yeah.
and see how they do with it. But
I would be fine if they did something like that in, like, let's say, non-conference college games. Like not Big Ten stuff, but just like when you play somebody. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing it a little bit, you know, up close and watching it intently. But I don't know.
Another one.
It's a little wonky.
For the regular season, it's interesting. College hockey familiarity, obviously, we know this, but they use 3-2-1 point system in the PWHL versus the NHL point system. Do you have a opinion on that?
Oh, like the Big Ten?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. I the thing I don't like about the NHL is you just get a lot of free points, and then like teams. I mean, like hasn't like Dallas and the Islanders, and so there's one other team that's just gone to their season is based on the fact that they just make it to overtime. Wasn't Toronto like that for a while early in the season?
Yeah, the Islanders have been going to overtime all the time. Boston is the recent one.
Boston
went to overtime like 8 games in a row recently.
And I find myself like rooting when the game gets down towards the end to be like, you know, if they can just get it to overtime, they get their point and then sort of see what happens. And I don't know if I like that or not. I listened to an Avalanche podcast and they're talking about the one guy's just like, I would just be fine if we just went back to ties. Like, you get the points or you don't.
I don't think I'd be opposed to that, honestly.
No, I think when I was a kid, I didn't like it as much, and I wanted, like, a winner every time. But now I'm kind of thinking, well, maybe two teams play evenly enough that you deserve a tie.
I would be okay with 3-2-1. I would be okay with ties. The thing I have never understood is why people are so obsessed with this. I hear this on different NHL podcasts. Actually, last week there was another guy. People are whining about this all the time.
About what?
The loser points and playing for overtime. I don't care.
Why don't you care?
Because people are talking about how this rewards going, you know, doesn't reward regulation wins and all this stuff. You know what rewards regulation wins? The playoffs.
Well, that's
true. If you're a team that has gotten into the playoffs because you just go to overtime a lot and you're really good at 3-on-3, that's not going to help you when it matters.
That's like, true.
These teams that people complain about that get 94 points because they have 15 loser points and they sneak in. Those teams never win the cup, so who cares? Like,
well, I don't think it's about winning the cup.
The good teams are the ones that win in regulation, and they will be rewarded for it in the playoffs. That's all I care about.
That's a very fair point.
And then the final two, these were the ones released last week. They will let the number one seed pick their playoff opponent.
So I do not want that in professional sports, but I would like to watch that because I would find it interesting. And I feel like they should televise the draft.
It would be very fun.
Can you imagine if the college football playoff was like that? I mean, you would that would be pretty hype.
Michigan would have picked Washington, right?
In the first, if they could have picked anyone.
Yeah, they would have picked Washington, right?
In the Rose Bowl? Probably. They probably would have. I mean, they were clearly the best matchup.
Yeah. I like it. I'm curious to see how it will play out, but...
Do you think people are going to get offended? I think so.
It's fascinating to see it in the PWHL because I think it might not breed hate the way it could in the NHL.
Yeah.
Because right now, PWHL is a really tight-knit league. These are all...
Like, everyone, they all need each other.
They're mostly all American and Canadian. A lot of them play on national teams together. A lot of them played at Ohio State or Wisconsin or Minnesota together. Like,
they've all played each other all the time for the last
They all know
years.
Each other very well.
Yeah.
And then the last one they announced, and this is an NHL-specific thing, but are you familiar with the gold plan for drafting?
Gold plan?
Yes.
I already have a credit card.
A way to dissuade tanking, basically, that it argues that the number one pick is given to the team with the most points accumulated after being eliminated from the playoffs.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. I'd have to see it a little bit and work out some numbers.
I've always been much more hesitant about it than other people who love the idea. To me, it's like, oh, we don't want them to lose games, but I've always kind of argued, well, okay, wouldn't that kind of mean that you want to lose a lot of games early?
eliminate yourself and then start winning.
The thing for the NHL I've always thought about it would be weird is that then like wouldn't you have reverse psychology at the trade deadline? Like, wouldn't in theory if you were Chicago, let's say right now, be getting Jake Guentzel and getting a bunch of guys at the deadline
so that
we can win down the stretch? Like,
so then you get these like superstar or maybe not superstar but star players that are on bad teams getting traded to like the worst teams, like the Sharks are loading up.
Yeah, you would have extreme incentive to do that, right?
No, because you'd have to trade assets, and that would go against it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. I've never been as sold on it as people make it out to seem. I don't think it would entirely solve the problem. But again, I'm curious to see.
Did you like Bill Simmons' thing about a teams that don't make the playoffs tournament?
And then I remember that.
The winner of the tournament then?
The one I thought was the best idea, which would never happen, but Sean McIndoe at The Athletic came up with this. Or maybe it was a reader came up with it and he wrote about it, but that the non-playoff teams pick playoff teams. And the worst team
fantasy draft,
the worst team in the league gets to first pick, right? And so then and it goes from there. And so then if the teams in the wild card spot or the teams that just missed the playoffs get stuck with like, you know, Seattle last year or whatever.
Yeah.
But And then the team that wins the cup is, you know, the team that picked them gets number one pick. So you'd have these like weird rooting alliances where like Columbus is bandwagoning like, you know, Colorado or whatever. So
that's like, that would be really fun to watch in a vacuum. I would not like something I take too seriously. I wouldn't. I think it would be stupid. It's a little like the winner of the All-Star game gets the home field advantage thing.
Yeah.
It's a little bit.
Yeah, it was fun for a little while, and it was like, this is hokey.
Too many sharks are being jumped here.
What I say about all these rules is I'm glad the PWHL is trying stuff. Your new league, why not?
That's the thing
what works, what doesn't work.
The USFL and the XFL have done some interesting things, and I think that like they've come up with a couple of stuff on kickoffs that I would be like, you know what, I'm getting tired of watching touchbacks all the time. So let's come up with a safer way to have a decent kick return. That kind of thing. Not like where you have two guys running at each other and wrestling for a ball and breaking each other's neck instead of a coin toss. But there are some things. I mean, Skycam came out of the original XFL.
It did.
So, I mean, there's stuff like that that I think that if you want to help build your brand, that's what you do. I mean, and to some extent, like I said, you know, college hockey could even benefit from that. I wouldn't mind seeing some of that in non-conference games, not in the tournament and that kind of stuff, or you know, conference tournaments or even conference games, but you know, early season matchups, even if it is like BU and Michigan and you have two really good teams and they have to play these different rules, it'd be fine for a couple of games to see what it is.
Yeah, I wouldn't be against it.
It's not going to be the worst thing about college hockey anyway. Since the tournament and referees have already been programmed in, but all right, we should transition to actually talking about game one. I don't think it'll take us very long, as you've alluded to in prep, and I definitely agreed with you. So Michigan goes to Minneapolis to take on the Gophers, coming off of a really solid weekend performance against Notre Dame. And so I think that like hopes and thoughts are high going into the weekend because Minnesota has been, you know, fine, but not elite. It's not the Minnesota team that we're used to seeing. And, you know, Michigan has generally done well there. So in the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, whatever it's been. So I think that there's a lot of optimism going into the weekend. And, you know, they lose 6-2, especially, you know, the first period, maybe they're okay. But it just seemed like you said, we watched this game together and you said they just don't have any jump today. And like nobody. And on top of that, it just seemed like the effort level was not where it needed to be for a game when the 3 seed in the Big Ten tournament and, you know, potentially with an upset coming, you could then host the semifinals. Like, you just wanted a little bit more. Like, you wanted a reason to keep watching the third period, and we did not really have one.
Nope.
The first bit of news in the game is Ethan Edwards does not play. I haven't heard anything about that, by the way.
No, that was a little surprising.
He might have been kidnapped. He might...
Adult napped.
Well, I don't know. How old is he? Is he 21 yet? I guess it's 18. He would be not
I think he's probably 21.
Yeah, he's close. So he could be hurt. He could be on the Doug McDaniel suspension. Honestly, I have zero idea. I'm not going to speculate it. I assume it's probably some little nagging injury. It hasn't been announced that he's done for the year or anything. So he doesn't play. That's bad. you get a lot more Steve Holtz and Luca Fantilli, and eventually it did kind of come up to bite them. But Michigan does get on the board first as they get an opening goal not too far into the game. Rutger kind of pulls up in the zone and fires and hits, I think it was Kester, as Kester was defending near the net and goes behind close for an opening goal. A little bit of puck luck to start, I guess.
Yeah, the play was really made by Nazar. I mean, this is what he does well at this level. We haven't necessarily seen a ton of like high-level playmaking skill from him, but his transitional value, I think, will allow him to be a pretty decent play driver even in the NHL, where his ceiling may be lower than we once thought it might be, but this is what he does well. He jumps on a puck that Minnesota briefly fumbles in the defensive zone, and then he gets on his horse, pushes play up ice, and Michigan has kind of a 3-on-2, sort of a 3-on-3 coming in, but he drives the middle lane, gives it to Rutger, and then he's got a chance to take a shot, and then you get the bounce. But it's the transitional work from Nazar here.
Yeah, and like you'd mentioned, he's kind of been doing that all year. I think he's sort of run out of space and ideas at times once he gets into the offensive zone. But his ability to move through the middle of the ice has always sort of been there this year.
Yeah.
So Michigan's up 1-0. Minnesota gets a power play after Steve Holtz, I don't know, how do you want to phrase this, attempts to circumcise a gopher or just kind of wax him between the legs. It was a stick lift they called a slash, which I mean, we watched that replay a bunch of times. I thought it looked dangerous. Did you not think that
That was not good.
That was not good. Yeah, that's correct. It was only 2 minutes though.
Yep.
What do you even call that? Is that spearing? Like, spearing is usually when you kind of take your stick and jab somebody. That's what happened to Mackey in the Colgate game.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what you would call it. I said spearing at the time, but I'd have to comb through the rule book.
I'd never really seen anything like that. But
not a good play.
No. So the Gophers get their power play, and nothing really happens. Brindley gets taken down at the end of it. Michigan gets their power play after that. And, you know, they get a little bit of zone time, and they had a couple of good chances, I thought, but the passes weren't in exactly the right spot, so you couldn't get that one-time shot allowing the penalty kill to recover. So they were pretty good, but just couldn't get the shots off. So Michigan doesn't really do a whole lot there. And then we get kind of the first controversial play, second controversial play, I guess we already talked about the first one, where Casey is kind of in the crease, and it was at Jackson Nelson that came through. And
yeah, he had his name was coming up a lot this weekend.
He did a lot of things. He just rocks Casey out of nowhere. The puck is like kind of going by, but Casey doesn't really have it.
When Nelson is lining Casey up, the pass is being made to the goal mouth.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the hit comes, the puck has already bounced off of Casey and into the slot.
I mean, don't you have to hit a guy that is playing the puck? Or does the puck just have to be within X number of feet or inches from him?
It depends. Again, I'd have to look at the rule
book. Casey was like, I mean, obviously Jackson Nelson is a larger human and Casey is, well, not. So he goes flying, but he just looked like he was not expecting any that hit at all. We all screamed, you know, it's got to be interference. You know, I suppose if the puck is in the general area, you know, you could argue that he's maybe trying to play it. It just didn't seem like Casey was really playing the puck either. Anyway.
It's a weird play. You can make the case for interference just because Casey isn't really playing it, and the way Nelson lines him up makes it clear he really was not intending to do anything regarding the puck.
He's just gonna...
Now, he doesn't really sprint in or leap to call it a charge. I don't know if you saw the Rempe hit on Lubushkin on Saturday night in the Rangers-Leafs game.
Rempe's just blowing up everyone,
isn't he?
Yeah,
that was a bad, bad hit. But, you know, it's compared to that, this isn't quite charging. It's just a weird one.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of on the borderline. It was tough for Michigan because I do think it affected Barcheski.
You do?
But it didn't make contact with him.
So he probably wonders because one of his guys gets knocked into row A.
Yes, he didn't get contacted, but I think having a crunching hit in the crease.
Yeah.
That's not something that happens very much. Not like that. You know, guys wrestle and stuff like that happens, but an open ice just...
But like a wrecking ball.
Yeah, just thump in the crease of your defense. Like, what?
So the puck ends up getting to the other side of the ice where Luke Mittelstadt is relatively open and fires a shot that kind of goes through Barcheski here.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like he's in position, has a chance to make the save.
He probably should make the save, but, you know, he immediately looks like behind him and looks to the ref, sort of like, hey, what was that?
Yeah.
And he hasn't really been a Mike Smith kind of guy Binnington, where he's complaining
to the ref
about every goal. And
yeah.
Like, he doesn't really do that. So I think when that's his first inclination, that suggests that it at least was on his mind that something had just happened.
Yeah, my problem is just that it's within his, like, body frame. And, like, that you just, you know, we're getting down to the time where you need those saves. Like we've allowed in enough goals in games that Michigan has used up all of their lives, and these are not ones you want to play with against a team that like Minnesota. So the puck kind of goes through them and into the net. There's no really review or Nerado challenges it, but I'm not sure what he's challenging. Because I don't think you can challenge the interference call.
They were challenging elbow to the head on the Nelson hit of Casey.
Okay.
He definitely got the hands up high on Casey, but it wasn't like malicious. It was just a height differential thing.
Well, but that's come back to get Marc Estapa a few times.
Yeah, we've never necessarily seen... I don't think this is a major. I don't think it is even under NCAA conventions, but I do see what they were looking at.
Okay. So it's 1-1, and then a little bit of bad defensive zone play. There's poor matchups, a little bit of a whiff, a fail clear, and then Nevers skates in and throws the puck between Jake's legs. It didn't look like the hardest shot, but it's five-hole goal that he can see, and, you know, it just, it's kind of what we've been talking about. Like, you just... You want to save there.
I didn't love this one.
No, this was. I had this as a bad goal. I mean, he was kind of hung out to dry, and the defense could have done a little bit more. However, you know, this was not an unsavable shot.
Nope.
So it's 2-1, and then Michigan actually right before the end of the first period, they do manage to tie it. Minnesota's trying to get the puck out of their zone. It can't get up the boards and out. Shifsky ends up getting the puck over in the slot and just probably fires his shot of the year, if not one of the greatest shots of the year from Michigan. It's just an absolute rocket that goes over Justin Close's glove and into the back of the net. And that kind of got us out of our seats a little bit. That was quite a snipe there from
just snaps
Shifsky.
It. Biggest thing here, again, is play made by other players. Rutger holds this play in.
He was the one that held it.
They get it up the wall. Minnesota cannot get it out. And then, just like that, they get it over to Shifsky, and he snaps this one. Great shot, but you know, this is one that any hockey coach is going to be very mad about, that one not getting out. But Rutger, using his size, all that stuff, holds it in. Good job, and they get rewarded.
So it's 2-2 after one, and I didn't think they played the worst period. I didn't love the Barcheski goals. I thought the defense was a bit sloppy, but 2-2 after not your best period on the road, you're probably taking it at this point.
Yeah, I thought it was a little creaky of a period, some up and down for both teams, but it was sort of like, okay, we'll see what happens now.
Well, what happened was Michigan decided to start taking a lot of penalties, and I believe they took 3 in the second period, and they all resulted in Minnesota power play goals, and that's basically what, you know, changed the game or won the game for Minnesota. I didn't think that there was a whole lot going on from a 5-on-5 standpoint, but on the power play, Minnesota just won the game. And this, you know, this is the first time Michigan really had a bad PK night in, I don't even know, since I don't even count the Stonehill series. So we're looking at sometime during the football season, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
But like that's going to happen sometimes, right? Like you're going to give up. You're going to have a bad power play night. You're going to have a bad penalty kill night. When you do it once a semester, it's like, well, you didn't really like the timing, but you don't always get to choose that. The first goal that goes in, Minnesota's second power play chance, and then Moore sort of fires from a wide angle, like way on the side, and it hits Jake's pads and goes in. And like, that's one where it's like, okay, now it's 3-2, and that's the third straight goal that's just probably shouldn't have gone in.
It felt like that goal was the turning point of this game, because the two teams had kind of been seesawing in the first period. I thought the first 5 or so minutes of the second, it was pretty low event, not a lot going on. At that point, it seemed very much up in the air who was going to win this game, and then that third goal goes in, and it was, Michigan just really didn't have any juice the rest of the game.
Yeah. The second one, it's just sort of a lucky bounce for Minnesota where a shot comes from straight out. And you and I discussed this a little bit. You were like, I think he might have tried to shoot this wide because it's so far off the net that it comes back out. And then Nelson swoops in from the side and just puts it in the empty net because Barcheski has to come out to face the shooter. But because the shot is, 5 to 6 feet wide of the net, he's not going to get it. and it also is going to get a nice careening bounce. And so then he's out of position because he's out expecting to at least deflect the puck, gets nothing of it, and he's just sort of floating in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
net's open.
It's a tough bounce for him. Maybe he could try to push back towards the post a little quicker, but it's real hard.
But I mean,
That shot goes so wide that it's either one of the worst shots of the year by anyone, or it's intentional. And it could be. I mean, I've seen defensemen totally miss the net. I don't know.
It was just so wide that it felt intentional. And yet I thought that...
The thing about saying it's intentional, the only thing that gives me a little hesitancy is the fact that typically when you see that stuff, like Nick Lidstrom used to do it a lot with the Joe Louis home boards, typically you shoot wide to the left side with the goal of it bouncing out to the right side. Right? You don't... This shot shoots wide to the right and bounces back on the right side.
Like it's straight ahead.
Yeah.
Like you're throwing the ball just off a wall.
Yeah. Typically you play angles off the end board.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it's 4-2, and then I didn't get super clarification on this, but Michigan got an unsportsmanlike bench minor, I think.
I don't know what that was. It never got explained to me.
On the would have been their fourth power play. And this one is just, you know, finally the walls start caving in, and Minnesota holds the zone a lot longer. They get some saves from Barchesky, some scrums in front, and then Oliver Moore is able to poke it in. Basically, after Seamus Casey like passes him the puck as he's down on the ice, and it just trickles in to make it 5-2. And you know, that was more or less all she wrote. The one thing of note is when it was 3-2, Barchesky did get run into by Jackson Nelson and looked like his head snapped a little bit.
There was a review of that play. Minnesota, for some reason, was really mad. It seemed very clear to me that it should have been no goal, but
yeah,
it definitely had a big effect on the weekend.
Well, the problem, you know, people are like, oh, he's running the goalie, is that, I mean, Luca Fantilli kind of...
He gives him a little bump. It's not a ton.
But it changes his direction.
He's not trying to run the goalie, I don't think, but he makes enough forcible contact with the goalie's head, and the goalie's on the puck. They were never going to win that challenge and get a goal there.
Well, the goal is if it went across the line, right? And I didn't think...
No, the challenge was that the puck went across the line
prior to the hit.
To the contact, which was bizarre.
Yeah, but that was a weird challenge.
Even if it was a proper GI, they just weren't going to win that.
So it's 5-2. In the third period, you know, Michigan has a couple of chances early that you're kind of like, well, maybe, but then nothing. The one thing that was interesting is Rutger walked in on the goal, ripped a shot, it went high, out of play, and then gets hit about 2 or 3 seconds afterwards in the head. But Michigan has already used their challenge. For whatever reason, they don't feel like challenging this one. That seemed like a legitimate contact to the head, major penalty, because it was also after the whistle.
Yep.
But for whatever reason, the referees would not review it, and Michigan didn't challenge it, and here we are. And at that point, I think my next note says, it's time to start writing. So... you know, Michigan gets a couple 3-on-2s that don't mean anything, and then Nelson splits the defense and gets a...
I didn't like this goal either, really. He's just shooting a wrist shot from kind of high.
That was on West.
Yeah, he never makes a move or anything, just shoots it. I think overall the biggest issue I have with this game is that it was just a really bad effort in the second half of the game from a team that is running out of time. That they don't have that many games left to shore up their resume. There was no real desperation or urgency.
Lack of sense of urgency.
They didn't look fast in this game either. They looked really slow against Minnesota. They looked small. It was just a really poor showing, and it was very disappointing. And then they thankfully were able to come out a lot stronger in the first part of the next game, which is the response you wanted to see.
Yep, but 6-2, and just... felt very down Friday night. You're like, I don't know what else to do with this team, with the situation. They're then locked into the 4 seed in the Big Ten tournament, and they are at that point, 15th, I believe, in pairwise, going into Saturday night.
Yep.
I can't believe I'm doing this. If you find yourself in the penalty box, you want a Michigan man arguing your case, call criminal law attorney and former prosecutor Jonathan Paul tonight. It's 248 and 924 9458. Or visit his old website at MichiganLawGrad.com.
Saturday night, can't say I was super looking forward to watching that game. It felt like everything was just sort of just needed to be played out, and you just wondered how Michigan was going to come out. You hoped, as you alluded to, that they were going to give you the jump that you wanted, but I looked at the lines and no Edwards again, and then Noah West is starting, and Andrew Albano was the backup, so.
Not great.
That's not great. And, you know, again, no official word that I've heard on Barcheski yet. I assume it probably had something to do with that contact to the head and his, like, neck snapping a little bit on that hit. But that's just speculation. I have no idea. But that seems like the most plausible thing. Hopefully it's not a 2 to 3 week thing, or else it could really be in some trouble.
Yeah.
All right. So game two actually kind of starts with a bang. Is a few minutes into the game, Michigan gets a power play. Nazer is tripped, and Seamus Casey makes an appearance on the offensive end for the first time in about 5-6 games since the Penn State series. He fires from straight away, and the puck finds its way in pretty early in the power play. It's 1-0 about 8 minutes into the game, and you know. It's good to see him getting on the board. You know, Michigan kind of struggles. They're built a little bit like the Avs, where they have a nice top line, and then they need their defense to kind of percolate offense. And when Casey has been a little bit missing on the offensive end in the last, you know, month or so, or a few weeks at least, it's been rough back there.
Yeah, they need him to perform, and he hasn't as much, but... He was much better in this game, and that was a good first sign.
Yeah, so he gets on the board. It's 1-0. It kind of wakes everybody up a little bit. It's like, okay, let's go a little bit. And they kill a power play right after that. Shipsky gets called for a cross check, and Minnesota does basically nothing. And, you know, 8:30, I had wrote down a note here, 8:30 to go in the first. Shots are 8-2 Michigan. So not only are they generating chances, because they have 8 shots in about, you know, 11, 12 minutes, but they also are limiting chances.
Yeah.
And for Minnesota. And that's, we wanted to see a little bit better of a defensive effort, and we wanted to see some jump from the forwards, and I think we got both of those things. And then I had, with about 3:14 to go left in the first, shots were 12-3. So they're keeping it up. They're owning that period, not getting any goals just yet, but playing a better game of hockey. I think Minnesota also probably didn't, they sort of were had the jump that Michigan had on Friday. They had done what they needed to do to secure their spot and, you know, just looked a little bit flat. Michigan took advantage of it. And they get a 3-on-3 rush from what is now their probably top line, as they've broken up the lines a little bit. Dylan Duke, Rutger, and Gavin Brindley. And you get a nice pass from Duke on the boards to Rutger coming down sort of the left side of the middle. And he passes another really nice pass across to Gavin, who's at the back post, and Brindley taps it in. It's 2-0. Just a really well-worked goal. Nice passing sequence.
Yeah, it starts with a shot punched out by West, and then they quickly just turn it around the other way, and then this is a classic Michigan goal. Speed, high skill, nice passing, A-plus chance, and it's in the back of the net.
And then you get probably one of the... few goofy plays of the evening, where I didn't even really see what happened completely or understand the decision. Like, you'd referenced earlier in the day that the Carolina Hurricanes goalie came barreling out of the net to try to tap a puck out and ended up getting scored on to give up a lead against the Jets. And basically that happened again later in the evening for Minnesota as Close leaves the net, gets the puck, and flips it right to Keenan Draper, who like catches it on the side and fires the puck back in the slot, into the crease, doesn't quite make it into the net, but Mark Estapa is there to tap it in, and Michigan basically just gets a freebie for no reason.
I have no idea what he's doing here, because the puck is flipped down, but his defender still has inside leverage and a step on Moldenauer, and even if he does, even if Moldenauer wins the race, he's not going to have enough space to get some great, you know, breakaway chance uncontested. I mean, yeah, it's a close battle.
Usually you come out when it's either you or the attacker.
Yeah, and there's nothing else, and the team is in a change or there's something. I don't know what what was going on with this.
Well, that was the last we saw of Justin Close, as he went to the bench and was done. I didn't really think either of the first two goals were on him. This one was a bit of a goofy play, and maybe they wanted to play Nathan Aire a little bit.
I don't know, maybe.
But they ended up bringing him in the second. So Michigan gets basically a dream period where they get three goals for a goalie that has not played very much this year, and they get awesome defense. And I ended up writing in my breakdown that, you know, in 2010, Michigan starting goalie Brian Hogan gets hurt, and they have to bring in walk-on Sean Hunwick, who's probably smaller than you, and so you just see the team kind of like galvanize around him, being like, all right, now we all have to play some defense tonight because this guy's going to have to come way out to challenge shots, and we better be clearing rebounds and blocking shots and sticking guys and just not letting anything really good happen for the other team because the pucks could easily go in. And they really did that, especially for the first and second periods. And I didn't think their third was too bad either. We'll get to that in a minute. But I appreciated their sense of urgency on defense and just basically going into lockdown mode.
This is a legitimate thing that you see in the NHL, different points in time, where whether it's a rickety goalie or a really good defenseman gets hurt for a team, and then they do change their playing style.
Yeah.
And the team commits to being more responsible and
back checking
and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So we start the second, and you know, the interesting thing about this is, you know, we looked at Friday night, and you know, Michigan has three penalties and gives up three power play goals, and that changes and effectively ends the game. They also take somehow three penalties in the second period of the Saturday game, but the first one is a really, really good kill, and the second one, I think that one was not quite as good, but Michigan does kill that off as well. And then the third one, so you're getting kind of late in mid second period or so, and TJ Hughes takes just a bonehead penalty. Like it's really hard to defend anything in this situation. I mean, because you know it's 3-0, you're controlling shots, you're controlling chances, you're basically controlling the game. You're halfway there. And the only real way that you're going to give up this many goals is if you just start, you know, hemorrhaging A-plus chances, or you take a major and you allow Minnesota's power play to go to work. And he just, you know, the cross-check from behind into the boards, should it be a penalty? You know, maybe a two-minute penalty. Should it be a major? I don't know. Probably, definitely not in the NHL. Is that even a boarding call in the NHL? It seemed a little soft.
It probably was.
Maybe.
I didn't think this was very good from Hughes.
But the decision that you make there is just, there's no upside. The guy's not in a dangerous spot. You're not winning anything by hitting him. And you end up getting the five-minute major call. He's out, so you lose a top six center. Now, Michigan responds and kills that five-minute major, maybe their best kill of the year. In the end, I believe that Minnesota's power play numbers were something like 11 minutes and 6 shots. I mean, it was a tremendous effort from the penalty kill. Basically, what we've seen through the majority of the second half of the season. But you just the lack of situational awareness. I mean, like the Rutger pass at Penn State where he flips it, you know, across the neutral zone leading to the rush and Penn State scores to get back in the game, like those are the types of plays that this team just makes too often, and this was the Hughes penalty.
Yeah, this really dumb, but the kill was nice, and then by the end of the second period when you'd gotten through a bunch of penalty kill time and they were still ahead 3-0, I felt very, very confident. When they got through that major, I was like, they're going to win this game.
Silly us.
Well, they did end up winning.
They did. Well, kind of, I think. But
they got 75% of a win.
Is that what it is?
I don't know exactly because it's 2/3 plus the road bump. So it's like...
But it's just... All right, so you're in the third period, and Noah West has played very well. Now, he wasn't super busy, and they didn't hang him out to dry and ask him to make a lot of hero saves. But he did a good job controlling his shots, making the plays when he needed to, didn't do anything too off the wall. And then the third period was just... Oh my goodness! Like I don't. Michigan's had some bad third periods, but I think this was like the stinker of all.
So I think that the Skaters themselves played one of the best third periods they've played this season.
Yes,
with the lead.
I agree.
They played a really good period. It was.
It was the goaltending, and that's a bit of an understatement.
Yeah.
The first goal. You know, this is a good shot from Jackson.
It
Nelson.
Is a good shot. No
he
doubt.
Comes down hard down the boards, turns and shoots from. You know, the bottom of the circle, but it's short side high, and it's really the only place that you can go with that shot, and it just goes in, and West just, he just needs to get a piece of it. I mean, it short side is just, I don't know. I've played enough indoor soccer goalie that I know that I've given up a couple of those, and they just stick with you, and you're like, that's one that I can't give up.
West looks pretty small. On this goal.
Like he's crouching too much?
Yeah, I'm not really a goalie expert, but he looks a little hunched over, and almost that he goes down a little early. I don't know. He's definitely leaving space open, and can see it from the shot time, and Nelson hits it.
It's not a dangerous spot, though. I mean, the defenseman forces him wide, and he's really low. And I mean, those are the shots that, you know, Michigan used to funnel to Portillo all the time because he was so big and, you know, you could shoot from there all the time. You weren't going to get anything on him. And, you know, obviously, you know, Noah West is not nearly the size of Eric Portillo, but it's just as a defenseman, if you're giving up that shot, like that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But in this case, you know, the goalie couldn't keep it out. It's 3-1. And the other problem is like it's 30 seconds into the period. This is basically the first rush of the third. And you're just like, let's get this period started a little bit. Let's get a couple shifts under our belt and just kind of get going. And, you know, you get 30 seconds in and all of a sudden you've, you know, given up one of your two that you can give up before you lose your lead. And I don't know. At that point, I was just like, well, I starting to wonder a bit. But a few minutes later, I think with about 13 minutes left in the game, you're on a 4-on-4 because you have matching penalties, and you get a really nice play from Casey and Brindley who kind of scissor across above the top of the house, and Casey drops it off for Brindley who picks it up going from his left to his right, and he just snipes one inside the far post, beating Nathan Airey and restoring Michigan's 3-goal lead. It's 4-1. You've got 13 minutes to go. And at that point, I was like, okay, you know, if the collapse was going to come, it would have come. But, you know, I just thought that at that point they had bounced back and gone a while without giving up the second goal and then adding one on. It felt like a different mentality that this team had had.
Yeah. I want to point out one thing. They give up their worst moment of the period happens about 3 minutes after that first goal. They give up a 2-on-0.
Oh, that's right.
That is a horrendous play. That's by far their worst moment. And West makes a tremendous save there.
So, kind of, but that shot was like...
Shot wasn't very good, yeah. But he comes up big in that moment. And then 5 minutes go by. Michigan salts it away really well. They go on the 4-and-4. They get this goal. I didn't think this was particularly great for Minnesota's goalie either, but they had a backup goalie in, and you get a wrist shot from up high to go by him. And yeah, it felt really good at that moment, but it was really giving up a goal shortly after that kind of, you know, again, just took the air out of the balloon a little bit.
Yeah, so it's 4-1, and then I think within a minute or so, and this was the one goal I was actually fine with, where a shot comes from the point, and Brody Lamb kind of skates in between West and the defender and the shot and tips it, and West goes down in position where he probably should be to make the save, but, you know, the deflection is a good one, and it deflects in the net, And to me, that's like, well, that's a hockey goal.
That's a great deflection.
What are you supposed to do with that? 4-2. It's unfortunate, but that's why you went out and you got your fourth goal. And on this play, like, there's not a way to defend that. It just, those happen.
The only way to defend it is to tie up the stick, and you can't tie up every stick at every moment.
It's no, and you can't protect, like, every shot from, shots are going to hit the net at times. So, 4-2. And then, this is the one that I was just, like, this was like the Barchesky third goal the night before, where a shot from Jackson Nelson comes below the goal line, and the puck crosses the goal line, going, north towards the other end of the ice, and as it's, and not like by a lot, but like it's at an angle that it's not going in the net, and it hooks on West's either knee or ankle, part of his pad that's sticking out, and then comes in behind him. And it wasn't even the front pad, where you can, think, oh, I didn't see it yet, or the puck is out of my vision, or whatever, but it comes all the way in and hits his right pad from the left side. And it's just like, these are goals that, like, this can't go in.
No,
like,
this one is really bad.
This is goofy beyond all goofy.
And the interesting thing about this one is it's Nelson again from a similar spot on the ice to the previous one. And in this case, when you look at the shot before it's taken, West doesn't look small. He's standing up. He's covering the top of the net. It leaves this bottom part open, and then the shot comes towards it, and he just kind of, like, falls over. And falls backwards into the net after it bounces in off of him. And
yeah,
not much else to say.
This is the one where I started to kind of panic a little bit, because it's 4-3 and it's the second bad goal, and this was the goofy goal. And the second one I didn't care as much about, but this one was you just felt like heads were going to kind of start spinning and panicking and all of that stuff, and then of course it happens. You get another sort of fluky bounce off the boards, that shot is high and wide, comes back, West gets over there but can't get back to his post, he's off his post, and the puck, I don't even know if it's shot, if it's flipped, if it hits a trampoline, something, and it just kind of goes up and sort of over him and then kind of rolls down into the back of the net. And it, again, is it sort of lucky and fluky? Yeah, in some ways, but that puck just also can't go in. You just have to be on the post. When you've used up all of your bad defensive zone turnovers and your goals throughout the year, I mean, maybe this is just who they are, and it probably is to some degree. It's just that there's just been, you want to make the tournament, like, this is the kind of stuff that you got to keep out.
Yeah, but I'm not going to make a big condemnation of the team as a whole, because there's a player who's never played in any of the other games where they blew leads doing this. And all the other players and all the other players are doing what they should be doing.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to criticize the team or say that this is them doing their normal thing, because this was not normal.
No.
They've blown a lot of leads, but they didn't really do anything to blow this lead. One person did, who does not play in any of the other games. And then,
but he's played in hockey games. I mean, maybe it was just...
I think he's just not a good goalie.
Yeah.
And not a good goalie gives up goals.
And
like
I think,
this.
Like, part of it was, like, if you just got sniped a bunch of times in the first couple periods, you would have been like, well, that's what you expected.
Yeah, if you but allocate these goals at other times, then...
Maybe it changes, but he seemed to navigate the first two periods pretty well, and then I guess the blades just came flying right off. And it's 4-4. At that point, I was kind of expecting it to be about 6-4 by the end of the game. But, this is where the rest of the skaters that you are defending, which I agree with you, Truscott gets a good shot off from the point. He's in the zone and finds Nathan Aire's pad. The puck kicks off of it to Rutger, and Rutger is able to not just shoot it back into the pad or into the chest, but he lifts it up over the pad and into the net with about 3 to 4 minutes to go, giving Michigan now a 5-4 lead. So they have, new life here after, like, absolutely just blowing a game they cannot blow. They do, and Rutger gives them another chance. I mean, that was the thing that I kind of defended a little bit, is, like, the mentality thing kind of fixed a little bit, at least among some of the players, like the attackers, at least anyway. I mean, Brindley gets the go-ahead goal, or the add-on goal, and then yeah. Rutger is able to finish this play.
They dug deep, and they got this goal, rebound, and Rutger's right there. He puts it in, and now it was like, okay, 3.5 minutes. And they do fine for the first 105 seconds. And then you just have this defensive zone draw and a couple of breakdowns. And
of all the people, it was going to be Rutger.
I don't want to let Brindley off the hook on this one.
But
standing in the circle, looking right at Jackson Nelson. His whole thing is to not let a pass through him. Because he doesn't come and try to check Nelson. Mm-hmm. He gives him space.
He's playing the puck,
but from afar.
Right. Like if you're pass.
Yeah. And a pass goes right through him after Nelson cuts down the wall a little bit and then makes a play. So you've got one guy there. I mean, Brindley has three options. He can either stand in the circle and cut off the pass. He can go hard and try to check Nelson on the boards, or he can fall back and try to cover more of the ice. But when your whole thing is, I'm just going to stand here and try and shadow the guy and not let the pass through, and then the pass comes through, that's not good from you.
No.
And then you've got Rutger behind him, who's...
He just kind of falls asleep.
The weird thing about this one is he makes one motion high. He's standing in the slot. Mm-hmm. He takes one step and swings his stick to the... Like, do you think they were going low to high on that? I mean...
I don't know.
And then cut behind him. There's no one in front of the net. He can see there's no one in front of the net. And this was a play that I saw coming a mile away.
Yeah.
Because you could see the backdoor cut coming. And it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. And this is the one goal that I think is probably... on the skaters. I mean, you could ask West to save it.
They had two bad plays in this period. They got bailed out on one, and they didn't on this one.
Well, and I think West can get to this one. This isn't the best shot I've ever seen either, but he's not primarily at fault. But
at the end of the day, they were up three going into the third. They made two bad plays and then created one goal. Even if both of the bad plays go in, you still expect to win the game comfortably.
You would think so, but... It's 5-5 then, and, you know, they get kind of bailed out at the end of regulation because they get a penalty, and Minnesota takes a call, and so you get a little bit of power play time at the very end. In fact, Dylan Duke comes very close to tipping a puck in and winning in regulation, but the puck just gets through him a little bit.
They get that power play, and he has it.
Yeah.
He's right there. Put it in the net.
It was like the Michigan State game,
right,
where the puck just jumps his stick a little bit. So
apparently there was, I don't know if there's a Culver's promotion Minnesota has related to going to overtime, but I'm scrolling through their Twitter looking at these, you know, the clips from this game, and the boys turned it on in the third is the tweet, and then there's just a picture of a Culver's concrete mixer.
Well, that's good for you.
And it doesn't say why this is.
What flavor?
It looks like vanilla, just plain vanilla sitting in, but I don't know what this is related to. It's tagging Culver's restaurants in the post, but I don't know if there's a promotion or something.
So Michigan has their power play in overtime. They run it pretty well. It's a 4-on-3. I mean, generally speaking, if you have long enough
we like those.
On a 4-on-3, you should score on one. And, you know, they don't get the goal right away. They have really good passing, couple of shots. And then finally, Casey gets a chance and picks a corner from, you know, a sharper angle to win it. And then we have a hand pass challenge, which I was alerted that is not legal. But they checked it anyway, reviewed it. It looks like it's actually an elbow pass. I don't know if that is a hand pass or not. Like, is it like soccer where the elbow is part of the hand? Does it have to hit the glove?
I don't know off the top of my
head. But anyway, the call on the ice stands, which you think probably would have. And so Michigan does get 2 points, and they get, I don't know, what did you say? 3/4 of a win, something like that. In pairwise?
Yeah.
I mean, it's better than a loss in regulation. It's better than a loss in overtime. It's just, you know, 3-0 in the third period, 4-1 with 13 minutes to go, up a goal with under 2 to go. I don't know. I just think you got to close it out. But we've seen it all year. It's come and gone and come back again. And unfortunately, it just feels like, for the most part, that's a little bit who this team is.
Somewhat.
Somewhat. A few times, anyway. So, you know, they're up to, I think, 13th in pairwise, which is probably okay. I think they're going to need to win the series next weekend, a sweep, preferably, and then see where you're at. Maybe they have to win the semifinal game in the Big Ten tournament. Maybe they won't. But not really what you wanted from, you know, you got two good periods, maybe three if you count that first period of the of the first game. I guess that's an okay period. But after that, you know, the second two and then that third period on Saturday were pretty rough, at least from someone on the ice. You got to hope that Barczewski's back, too.
You certainly do.
All right. Well, there were other games that were played. We can check in on our old friends and some couple games around the league.
Are we doing pairwise now?
We can if you would like.
Well, that's more important, at least to start.
Okay.
Because we're down to the wire here. So Michigan is 13th in pairwise at the moment, just above St. Cloud State. You've still got a bunch of teams in the 5-5.
Yeah, there's like three range. Teams in front of them that are all. I mean, it feels like one win they could pass three teams.
Providence,
if they get the right
CC,
result.
UMass, Michigan, St. Cloud, and Western all have RPIs that begin with 5-5. So that's number 10 to 15 on the bubble. That's quite a bit of range there. The pairwise probability matrix. Pull this up real quick here, but Michigan's odds have improved just a little bit over last week, where I think we're sitting in like the low 60% range. Now they're up to 69%, 58% at large, 11% automatic qualifier, so 11% chance to win the Big Ten tournament. The odds of that, by the way, MSU 36%, Wisconsin 29%, Minnesota 19%, Michigan 11% to win the Big Ten tournament. Notre Dame 3%.
Yeah.
Ohio State 0.6%, Penn State 2%. So Michigan has almost no chance of getting to the 2 line. It's about 1%. They have a 46% chance of being on the 3 line, and then about 23% of being on the 4 line. So that's what we're looking at. Same as last week, basically. Same teams in the bubble range. There are still about 9 teams locked in the top 9. And then this is the bubble territory.
Yep.
And it's going to be choppy week in and week out. The only interesting thing I have to say right now is I was looking at this and trying to make a mock bracket last night. And if this was the picture right now, it would be really, it would be a doozy for the people in charge.
Okay.
Because you have a lot of NCHC teams and a lot of Big Ten teams like in the same range.
Yeah.
And it creates a lot of tricky matchups. So like at the moment, BC would play Bemidji, BU would play RIT, and then 3 and 4, Nodak and Denver, would be in theory matched up against St. Cloud and Michigan. Problem is they can't play St. Cloud.
Right.
But you have 2 1 seeds that are NCHC teams. So your options are either to flip Denver and MSU and demote Denver to the 2 line, which they never like to do.
Yeah.
Or you flip RIT and St. Cloud and give the higher seeded team the harder matchup.
Yeah, I mean,
which they also don't really like to do. Remember last year there was a debate at would they flip Colgate and all that kind
right.
of stuff? Or flip the Atlantic Hockey Team,
right.
blah, blah, blah.
Well, I think the 2 seed would just kind of be screwed in that spot. They would probably get St. Cloud, and then you'd give the other Boston, one of the Boston teams would get.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's also a nightmare with UMass if they were to fall to the 4 line because they're a host in the region that is almost certainly going to have a BU or BC as the number 1. So
but
they better hope UMass is either out or on the 3 line. By the way, why does the host have to be in their region? Who cares? These arenas are empty anyway. The NCAA has made it clear they never care about attendance. They don't care if there's 50 people in the arena. Then we got to, you know,
I think digging into
mess
like
up the bracket
existential
because
questions
UMass
about
has to be in Springfield, yeah. which isn't even their city or their arena. Like, and then the Providence Regional isn't hosted by Providence. It's hosted by Brown. So a team that is literally in the city doesn't have to be there, but a team that is not from that city has to be there in the spring.
I mean, there are so many things wrong in college hockey. Like, this feels like complaining about contact to the head being majors and all that again. Like, this is just stuff
well,
that
we do have something to complain about that this week in our Big Ten rundown.
Yeah.
But
well, that'll be in a little bit. Are there any more things you want to alert the listeners to on Pairwise, or have you gone through your bullet points?
I think that's where we are right now, is that you know, we're sitting right on the bubble and need to win this weekend.
We'll wrap it up a little bit when we get finished with the Notre Dame preview, but we'll check around at some scores. Augustana tied the Hockey Bears of Alaska 2-2. That's another not loss for Augustana before then they get shut out the next night. So, but they do get one non-loss. Not bad. Their season, I think, is coming to a close. We'll have to see if they play next week or not. Providence had an interesting weekend where they sank the Merrimack 4-2 and then resurrected it and lost to them the next night 2-1. So
we liked that second one. We got a lot of help this weekend. Peter's rooting guides had been not good the first few weeks, and then
the results, not his writing. Well, we're not right, slamming Peter for no reason. Yeah,
if you read them, then you were very unhappy.
Yes,
but this week we got some help. So, and Providence plays BU on Thursday. So we are all in for the Terriers.
Yes, and well, and we'll get to that in a minute because Providence, UMass, and is it St. Cloud all play teams that are much better than them, I think. So UMass, the team that has to be in their regional, right, Alex, as we just learned, beat their Lowell-based namesakes 2-1 in overtime, and then again 4-3 in overtime.
Yeah, we were hoping for the Riverhawks, but both went to overtime, so at least it got diluted.
Yeah. But UMass with a couple big wins
and
for themselves.
They play Maine this weekend. Maine is ahead of them.
At Maine, I believe.
At Maine, so we are cheering for the Grizzlies.
We're not even sure if they have roads in Maine. But unfortunately, Lindenwood's season has ended. The St. Cloud Clouds were evaporated 6-2 by the Pioneers of Denver, which was positive for Michigan. And then their Clouds were burned off 7-2 by Denver. So that is a 13-4 weekend in favor of Denver.
We would also like Duluth this weekend. It's in Duluth to take care of St. Cloud.
They play.
By the way, if the tournament started today, Michigan will be playing Denver in a 1-4 matchup. I dream that that happens.
You dream that it happens.
That is going to have, I'm setting the over-under if that one happens at least 11 goals.
Denver, we kind of thought that a couple years ago.
Denver scores 5 goals per game with 891 team goaltending. That team against Michigan, oh man.
Just play 6 out.
We need it so badly.
The Stonehill Stone Rocks scored 3 times, but lost 9-3 to Alaska Anchorage. 9-3. And then the next day they lost 12-2. That is many goals.
Yep. They are 2-32 on the season. 2 games to go.
But one of those games was against
Assumption University.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, Alaska Anchorage, they deserve a round of applause.
Yeah.
They are 14-16-2. They've got 2 games left against ASU. Even if they lose those, one of their better seasons in a while.
Well, they had some signature wins. They went to Penn State, Wisconsin, and I think someplace else and ended up getting a victory, or at least
their goalie, Jared Whale.
Yeah.
9.11 save percentage in 23 games.
It's pretty good.
I'm ready to tamper.
Okay.
And get him out of the portal.
There you go. All right. We'll be whaling for Whale. All right, so now we can move on to the Big Ten, and we can talk about that moment in the Penn State-Ohio State game. Now, first of all, we'll just go through the scores because they don't really matter. But Penn State wins 5-2 and then 2-1 in Columbus, sweeping the Buckeyes. But the moment of the weekend came in early in the Friday game. Do you want to take us through this one, Alex? This is one you got to go look up. You got to look up the video to this.
Yeah, Drew Van Dries on Twitter had the video. A goal was scored by Ohio State, and Penn State challenged for a major in which a Penn State player skates into the back of an Ohio State player and then falls backwards.
So he skates into a guy in front of him and then falls backwards?
Yes. Like he just skates into a guy and then, boom, falls back.
Have you ever seen that?
The
like,
person?
Not at the local rink of just a skate around, like not even a hockey game. Like I've seen that happen when you're just going to like skate night at Yost.
It's very Keystone Cops. It just looks like a blooper reel thing. And the guy skates into someone's back and then falls down. And they challenge for a major and they get it. 5-minute major, head contact, game misconduct.
How?
For a player who was skated into, had no idea.
He was like, what just happened? Is there someone behind me?
Yeah.
What was that? Was that a dog? but it was a major. That, I mean, that's, everything is broken, right?
Like, everything, that's, this is my thing. I got on an angry Twitter tangent after the fact about this, but like, this is my thing. Is like, college hockey as a product sucks, and
it's not,
it just
great.
Does. It just does. Yep. And I wish that it could not be the case. It's the refereeing is really bad. The rules are really bad. They have created this insane system of 5-minute major challenges in the name of player safety, and then they don't bother to protect player safety when players actually get injured. It's completely random. It threatens the integrity of games. Half the games aren't even on TV. It's a garbage product. It is a garbage product run by unserious people, and it's a shame because hockey is a great sport. And
some of these rivalries are
fun. I will never
fun.
Not be an ambassador for the sport of hockey, but unfortunately, I would not tell people to watch, just honest. Like, if I met someone and I was like, no, don't watch college hockey, watch the NHL. They need to change some things and make an honest attempt to actually have good games that people want to watch and can access.
Yeah, no, I agree completely with what you said. There's even some upside there because you have rivalries and you have built-in colleges that already don't like each other from other sports and that sort of thing. And you have, especially in Hockey East, you have a bunch of schools that are all really
near
each other.
And there's a number of good players.
But
and we
the way that it is run...
create a postseason system designed to make sure that the good players are not rewarded and don't get to play on the big stage.
And then
don't get
we
to
can
celebrate.
Go on ESPN and just get excited when good teams lose to bad teams, and then you have to watch bad teams play bad hockey later on in the tournament.
For no particular
reason. For no reason whatsoever. And then this kind of like...
Could you imagine if in college football we decided, okay, here's a rule. If at any time you have one challenge for free... you can just use, there's no repercussions at all, and it could nullify the opposing team scoring a touchdown. Find any play recently, and see if at any point in a route there was defensive holding on a receiver running a route.
Contact. Just contact.
Just illegal contact.
Yeah.
See if there was.
Yeah.
And if you can find it, then we give you a free touchdown. No one would watch that. No one would watch that.
No one would watch that. I would not watch that. And I will watch almost any
football.
And
this is the system we have, where legal goals are disallowed for routine plays that no one notices during the live action. In the name of player safety, and then players get their knees blown out and no one cares.
How did we even get to this point? I mean, it's just, I can't even. But, all right, we have one more series to talk about. Wisconsin played Michigan State in what should have been probably the most hyped series of the weekend. It was on BTN-, so no one watched it. And Michigan State won on Friday in a close game that ended up with a wide score margin because of some third period scoring. It was a tight game for a while, but Michigan State wins 5-2. Wisconsin then wins the game on Saturday. That's meaningless for the Big Ten regular season. I guess it helps them pairwise, obviously, but they win 4-1 on the second game. The thing that I remember about this is we had it on because we make Brian bias. BTN-, and so we had it on during the Michigan game, and I don't know how many hits I saw from Michigan State that looked like completely dirty. Just late, against the boards, blind sides. There was at least three, and I just was, you know, I don't know. We'd seen a few of those against Michigan. They're a good team. They score goals. They have a great goalie. They're probably have a chance to make a nice tournament run, but I don't know.
They're a greasy team.
Greasy is being diplomatic, in my opinion.
Augustine in this game, 44 for 46.
He gets up for the big ones.
He's got the dog in him. He shows up for these big games.
Yep.
And he got them the regular season title, the one seed for the tournament, so Michigan could see them in the second round if they beat Notre Dame.
And if, you know, you don't get a Wisconsin upset, which, you know, I don't know, the way they've been playing lately... that's not out of the question either.
No, I think this is the most interesting Big Ten tournament that we have seen.
Yeah.
At least recently. I don't know about 2015 or whatever, but in the last 6-7 years, this is the most interesting one because you have Wisconsin and Ohio State, the 2-7, where typically the 2-7 has been something that
a massacre.
No one should be allowed to watch.
Yeah.
Like that multiple Michigan State series that were beyond belief. But this time, the 2-7 matchup features a 7 seed that swept the 2 seed the most recent time that they played.
Now, granted, that was in Columbus.
Sure.
And this game will,
sure.
These games will be in
But Ohio
Madison.
State has shown a little bite late yep. in the season, so that'll be interesting. And then you've got a 3-6 matchup between Minnesota and Penn State. And
although the last time they played in Minnesota, Penn State did not score on the weekend. So.
Yeah, that was not their best weekend, but Penn State's beaten them once. Penn State is not a good team, but they're not terrible. I don't think they'll win, but they could.
Yeah, they may, maybe they steal a game.
And then Michigan and Notre Dame, obviously, are...
Well, we just did this a couple weeks ago, but we can talk about Notre Dame. I don't think a ton has changed since the last time Notre Dame has played. They played Michigan, and now they will play them 4 straight times, as
yeah.
Michigan had 2 games with Minnesota sprinkled in between there, but... Notre Dame is 21 in pairwise. They're not terrible, but they're going to need to win probably the Big Ten tournament.
They've been ice cold recently.
Yep.
They had a 4-game win streak in late January into early February where they beat Ohio State, swept Penn State, beat Michigan State in the first game of that series, and then since then, 1-6. One of those games in overtime at least, but not good.
So they're on outside the bubble right now. And
they are not in the tournament. They will not be in the tournament unless they win the whole thing.
Yeah, which
they have no path to at large.
You said they had, what, a 3% chance or something that
yeah,
was
the
3% mathematically.
To win the Big Ten is their chance of the tournament.
They're 37th in Corsi, so they don't have the puck a lot. They don't shoot it a lot. They don't score a lot of goals.
Nope.
18% on the power play is, I don't know, below average?
Nothing notable.
83% penalty kill, not too bad, though. That's decent, especially going against a Michigan power play that leads the nation. 9 drafted skaters, but, you know, Nelson is a second rounder. I don't even know if he's available. He had a pretty rough injury, an ankle or leg injury, at the end of the, I think it was the Saturday game at Yost. If he's not available, they have 2 skaters that are scoring over 0.75 points per game, barely. Danny Nelson is one of them at 0.77. His status is unclear right now. Landon Slaggart is the other one. He scores goals, but he only has 10 assists, so his points per game is like 0.82. I mean, they don't put the puck in the net other than if Landon Slaggart does. They have a couple of guys that are close to double digits. We're not sure about Nelson. Knubel has, what, 9 goals, 9 assists? In 34 games.
They're just not a high-scoring team. They don't have a lot that scares you.
But what they do have...
They got a good goalie.
They have a goalie that could win 2 games at Yost and no one would be shocked.
Nope, and that's going to be the challenge.
Bischel is 2.46. Save percentage is 0.927. Yes. Very good numbers. We've seen him a ton. He's played really well against Michigan. They're probably going to have chances on him. Hopefully they get some power plays. You know, it feels like if they can get to 3 goals in a night, you're probably in the clear unless you just start hemorrhaging them. Although, you know, if Noah West is in at the other side,
you never know.
You never really know. The games will be Friday, Saturday, and if necessary, Sunday. It sounds like they will all be 7 p.m. I thought that maybe the Sunday game would be an afternoon game. That does not appear to be the case if there needs to be one. And of course, for one last time, Alex, all 3 games would be on BTN minus because we just can't get enough of it.
There are
no games on BTN. It is, well, you know what it is. It's the women's college basketball.
Yeah,
Big
I know.
Ten tournament.
I know, but
I think Minnesota Penn State drew FS2. So, it's an upgrade from BTN minus.
The competitive
I guess.
Competitive fishing is preempted more.
Hey, the Bassmaster Classic is something that everyone needs to take in at least once. Anyway, it feels like this should be a series that, you know, especially if Barczewski plays, Michigan should win. Maybe they drop a game, but they're probably a slightly better team than Notre Dame. They've won 3 of the 4 games that they've played against them. Notre Dame's pretty cold. You would hope Michigan's a little fired up after that series in Minneapolis. And you're hosting, you know, it seems that the arrows are pointing towards them, but in this sport and with these goalies, you just really never know.
Nope.
But hopefully when we talk to you next week, we will not be talking about the end of Michigan season, because I think if they lose this series, that's probably it.
They would be in big trouble.
Yeah.
you for listening to Michigan HockeyCast 6.18 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Come back next week for the end of Michigan season, or hopefully not.